Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the iTricks Magic Week in Review. This is Michael Lauk here in the pilot seat. And I know everybody out there is lamenting that I'm not Justin Robert Young in his raspy voice. I know our guest is. Speaking of which, it's Justin Willman on the line. Justin?
What is up? Yeah, I was going to say, man, it's not the same without that, whiskey-soaked growl.
I know. It's like he's like my Selma Diamond. You know,
you're Selma Diamond. I like it.
Yeah,
I like it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on, man. I know you have a lot going on. We're recording a little earlier than people will hear this, and you're at the castle right now, right?
I am. I'm playing the palace this week. Right now, it is when we're recording this Wednesday, so two nights in, and it's like the best grind ever. It's so fun. The crowds they're fantastic. But man, you know, you hang late into the night because every night's a party, night after night, and all these people are coming, friends kind of coming out, and they're only coming for one night, so they of course want to make that night a party. So I end up kind of having to be like a party animal every night, and it takes a little bit out of you. Hence my whiskey soaked growl.
So. Hey, there you go. You know,
yeah,
I'm still a firm believer that in many ways magic was at its best when there's a, you know, broken palm oil hanging out of the side of your mouth and
exactly.
And you're playing with you're using like some kind of promo cards from a garage down the street. That's that's magic.
The good old days.
Now I have a question about the castle. Okay. As somebody, I've kind of talked about this in the show before, so listeners will know I've done a lot of unexpected magic. I haven't done a lot of things where I'm hired as the magician. So to me, the castle seems like a super daunting prospect because people are going to not only see a magic show, but what should be the best magic show in America.
Yeah.
You know, if not the world. Is there a lot of pressure? Do you not really think about that? Does it make it better? Does it make it worse? Am I going to screw you up now?
I think it makes it. I mean, I think it makes it great in that, like, these days, most of my venues are like comedy clubs and theaters and music venues and rock clubs. Kind of when I'm on tour, so I'm doing magic and comedy in venues where people are not used to seeing magic and comedy, and I kind of like that challenge. But what that means is that kind of, you know, there's just a little skepticism when I'm on tour doing these types of rooms, especially comedy clubs where, you know, I kind of have to bill myself as a comedian first and a magician second, but obviously magic's my passion and bread and butter. So I'm kind of used to that challenge of winning people over to the idea of magic. And at the castle, of course, I mean, there's nowhere in the world where the audiences are more primed to see magic. So I think what's great there is I can deliver on the magic promise and then really surprise them, hopefully, with, you know, the comedic take and, you know, kind of the high tech savvy spin on things. So I think it's fantastic, you know, and I've lived in LA for 12 years, and it's just, you can't say you're a magician in LA to anybody without them immediately mentioning the castle. It's like a badge of honor just in lay people's minds, you know what I mean? So it's, you know, like the place or hate the place, I mean, it's an institution, and it's kind of a great place to at least once a year pay homage by working a week there. So this is my week of homage.
Nice. Now, are the crowds there, are they, I mean, okay, so they're expecting magic. Are they more magic savvy in general?
You know, I mean, a lot of the people there, it's a mix. You've obviously got the magician regulars, and I'd say that's maybe, you know, 5 to 10% of the audiences in the shows. On certain nights, maybe there's more magicians. They come early in the week, and so you'll spot a lot of familiar faces. And then the non-magicians who come are divided into, like, half are just magic enthusiast regulars who come a couple times a year and love bringing friends there and just love magic. And so they tend to see a lot of stuff, you know, which is great because then they appreciate when something's great. They appreciate when you're doing something they haven't seen before. They're hip to it, but not too hip. You know what I mean? And then there's also just the newbies a lot of them have never even seen live magic before. A lot of people who come to the Magic Castle have never seen magic in this, like, proper setting. Maybe they've seen a magician at a restaurant, or maybe they've seen a magician at a birthday party, but they've never seen magic done, you know, in a venue that makes it shine. So really, you can't go wrong. The Magic Castle audiences are great, and there's like 9 bars in the place, so everybody's boozed up and in a great mood. Everyone's dressed up. Everyone paid good money to get there, so you know, it's not like people are, you know, withholding applause and appreciation. They're there to give it to you.
Is there like a Magic Castle industry night?
You know, they do have members only nights, and I like once a month, normally on a Wednesday, where it's just members and their guests. So it's magician heavy, lots of familiar faces, and I love those nights because, you know, you don't get, you know, occasionally the Magic Castle, you'll get just kind of like, you'll get the drunken, you know, just like a 9-to-5 dude who's coming to the Magic Castle for the first time and just drinks too much too early and just kind of sucks the fun out. You know, that happens obviously with the 9 bars, but I love industry night. I really love you know, getting magicians in the audience and picking their brain, and I know when I can, you know, when I can get a impressed look out of them, then I'm doing something right, you know?
So it has like the advantages of that kind of magic club performance in some ways without the huge disadvantages of the magic club performance.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It does potentially sound like it could be kind of, you know, a bunch of squares, but man, you know, a night at the Magic Castle reminds you that magicians are pretty cool people, and it's kind of cool to hang with the cool kids. Just like, you know, I don't play music, but if I did, I imagine going to like an insider rock club where I get to jam and perform for other great musicians, and you kind of get to feed off each other's energy and show each other your new licks. You know, the Magic Castle kind of lets you do that.
Yeah, well, that I totally understand. I used to work for a music manufacturer, actually. We made guitar amps I worked for Crate and Ampeg, who invented the bass amplifier, right? And I did all their artist relations repairs and stuff, and they were here in St. Louis, and when I was there, some of the best music you'll ever see, I've seen in a warehouse, you know. So I totally get that.
That's the thing. I mean, and also just like at the castle, some of the best magic you'll see will be, you know, at 2 a.m. in the corner of a bar, you know, with 5 people watching. I mean, that's the best part of it. But for me, like, I'm in the palace this week, and I've been really putting a lot of work into my stage show and writing a lot of comedy, and I'm putting new bits in there. So it's just, you know, you do 21 shows in 1 week. So like a couple bits in my show are brand new. So I just love the idea that knowing at the beginning of the week, what started as kind of like this rough idea, hopefully by the end will be a polished gem, you know, and you really can't get that kind of repetition anywhere else.
21 shows in a week. So they're driving you like vaudeville.
They do work you hard.
Nice.
But it's worth it, man. The shows are very gratifying.
That's cool. Now that's like you said, about 1 week a year. How many weeks are you touring since we know, I think everybody realizes that you have some TV gigs too.
So touring, I mean, it's kind of like one big long perpetual tour. Occasionally it'll be, you know, like a bunch of days back to back. In February, I did a tour called Full of It with a musician buddy named Bushwala, and we did like 3 solid weeks, a show every night in rock clubs, and we kind of drove around the country. That was cool. I mean, that was cool as a magician to kind of have that, you know, rock and roll lifestyle, but it wore me the hell out. The rest of the time, like, I'm doing kind of weekends. So I just did a weekend at the Tempe Improv in Arizona. I'm doing next weekend in Tucson, you know, a bunch of comedy clubs coming up. So that would be, you know, fly in on Thursday, do 2 shows Friday, 2 shows Saturday, a show Sunday, fly back to L.A. So it's a little more manageable.
And all right. So you're playing comedy clubs, you're playing venues. You know, I think that's a big question for a lot of guys is like, if I want to go on a tour, it's colleges or what?
You know? Yeah, I mean, like for years, colleges were my bread and butter. So like from like 2005 and 6 to, you know, just a couple years ago, I would cram in 150 colleges a year and I loved it. And that would be, you know, that would definitely be what I would consider a tour, in that you're kind of gigging from night to night to night to night. But at these colleges, obviously the campus brings you on, and they have a budget for entertainment. So the students, you know, your show is advertised as a free show for students, and whoever wants to come comes, and whoever doesn't doesn't. And you know, the students kind of, they're great shows, don't get me wrong, but they don't necessarily have any, you know, they didn't buy tickets, they didn't, you know, express a strong interest in putting their money where their mouth is and coming to see you, versus now where I'm trying to like sell real tickets and build a fan base. And, you know, and it's so hard, man. Like, selling tickets is really tough compared to the days of doing the colleges where you could get, you know, the rooms packed. But it's a nice test of just kind of your draw, your appeal, and I think building that fan base, keeping in touch with the people who dig you, and nurturing that over time is crucial, and it's a good lesson.
So what kind of net presence goes with that then for you? You know, is there the Justin Willman Street Team when you hit a town?
I'll tell you, like, what I do is I've got, you know, I've had an email newsletter that I maybe send out once a month, and I've had that building up for, you know, for 8 or 9 years now. And that's like from the college days, and just people who dig me and go to my website and sign up. So that's a good way to keep, you know, just the diehards or the people who actually really do want to know what you're up to in the loop. And then there's Facebook and Twitter and that kind of thing. But that's always hard because people follow so many people these days, and everything slips through the cracks. So I'll do a show in Brooklyn one night that I will have promoted the hell out of. And then the next day I'll get a tweet, "Hey, when are you coming to Brooklyn? I really want to see you." And I'm like, "Dude, I was just there last night, and I'm a promotional whore. How did you miss that?" So that could be a problem. But you just gotta keep in touch. And you mentioned the TV gigs. That's kind of helped at least with brand awareness. You know, the cupcake show that I've been hosting for a couple seasons, which is over now, but they still re-air it, and people dig that. And you know, different talk show appearances and stuff like that. It just helps for when, you know, a comedy club advertises you, for people to say like, "Oh yeah, I know that guy," or "Yeah, I think I'll go. Let me watch some clips. I've heard of that." And it just kind of, you know, breaks the ice a little easier.
Do you friggin' hate cupcakes now?
Mm-hmm.
I figured.
Yeah, man. Like, I go to a party. There could be a whole plate of them. I'm not interested. But honestly, I was, you know, I mean, I enjoy a good sweet, but it's not like I was ever like some cupcake aficionado before. I've never baked a cupcake. I don't know how to.
You didn't go through like some kind of mad culinary competition to become the host.
No, it was. I always say like I was in the right place at the wrong time to become the host of Cupcake Wars. But I mean, I'm very grateful for it. It's been a great experience, but it was just a very, you know, random job opportunity for somebody who microwaves all their meals like I do. Like, you know, to host a show on the Food Network and simultaneously really not. I mean, I learned a lot. I now know how to bake a cupcake, but I prefer not to. I will pass. I will eat a professional's work as opposed to my own. But what's great though is that, you know, the Food Network has such a wide demographic in their audience. So I'm able to kind of, you know, you just get a lot of new fans from that. And then those fans who maybe didn't know that I was a magician and comedian, didn't even know that I did something they would want to come see live. You know, my next step is then to educate them that, you know, you may know me for this thing, but here's this other thing I do, and when I come to your town, you should come see the show and tell your friends about it. So that's kind of where I'm at now, is just educating people who know me as whatever they know me as, that I have like another side.
I have one more question about Food Network.
Yeah.
And I don't want to beat the Food Network horse, but I mean, you kind of mentioned that when you do comedy clubs, and you might even mention this off the air, you kind of have to push the comedy first and the magician second. A lot of times mm-hmm. magicians are kind of outsiders in entertainment because of the way entertainment's gone the last 50 or so years. At Food Network, you're the magician / host who's not a cook at a cooking network. Was that like a weird thing? I mean, because like, who doesn't cook on that network? It's like you and the dude who yells about ingredients on Iron Chef, who makes kung fu movies on the side.
Yeah, I think the only other dude who doesn't cook or isn't like a trained chef is Mark Summers, who hosts Unwrapped.
Yeah, but he also produces half that crap. So
yeah,
he
does.
They can't be mean to him.
But what's so funny is that Mark Summers also is a magician. Started as a magician.
Oh, I did not know that.
He hosted Double Dare, you know, all that.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then he's kind of his daughter went to Emerson College, where I went, and we kind of got in touch 7-8 years ago, and he kind of just became my mentor. Would give me advice over the phone, and then it just so happened that I got a gig on the network that he was also gigging on. So funny.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've always imagined like Food Network parties and like you, and like what are like in the corner and all those chefs are talking chef crap and just like
I can fake it well. Obviously, I'm a nerd, so I can really get into I enjoy getting into things that other people are passionate about. So even though I kind of, you know, I poo-poo the fact that I don't know anything about cooking, but I really do appreciate people who are obsessed and dedicate their lives to making, you know, an amazing craft, an amazing art form, whatever it might be. Just like I am for magic, I really love people who are that for other things.
Well, yeah, and I mean, and it is, I think food can be an art. I think, I really do.
Without a doubt, yeah, without a doubt.
I mean, because it art should connect it at an emotional level, and food can do that, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And magic can do that and should do that and doesn't enough, but that's a whole separate rant.
Absolutely.
And now we're about to take a break, but we might as well mention too, you know, for people who don't know, and we did cover it on the site, you've got a game show on Disney now too.
I do. It's called Win, Lose, or Draw that airs on the Disney Channel. And again, I mean, that was another, honestly, I've always loved game shows since I was a kid. I think, you know, I remember faking sick from school or whatever, quote unquote, sick from school. I would just love watching Bob Barker host The Price is Right and just was thinking, dude, he's got the best job ever. You know, beautiful women,
I know,
new
right?
cars, long microphone. Like, I want to be that guy. And so it's pretty cool to, you know, kind of cross that off the bucket list and host a game show.
Oh, hey, Justin, let me stop you right there because believe it or not, we're probably overdue for a break. So let's take a second.
Let's break it up.
Let's break it up. Everybody listen to this, and we'll be right back with Justin Willman.
Thanks, man.
Hello, this is Michael again with my little friend Paco. Paco, can you speak? Speak, boy. Come on, speak.
Speak.
Okay, the one time I want the Chihuahua to bark, he's not actually going to bark. But I'm going to assure you that Paco wishes to join me in urging everyone out there to support your local no-kill animal shelter. Paco has been a part of our family for 8 or 9 years now, and despite the 8 or 9 years of otherwise constant barking, he's been a real important part of the family, and we love the little guy. And there's lots of little guys out there that need your love who haven't done anything wrong except for being born to irresponsible pet owners. So no matter where you live, I guarantee there is a no-kill animal shelter in your area and that they need your help. So if you have time, if you have money, if you have inclination, if you're looking for a great charity, support your local no-kill animal shelter. Thanks. And Paco thanks you too.
iTricks.com.
We're back here with on the Magic Week in Review. And I say we're back like...
We went somewhere.
Yeah, yeah, well, you know, like, I mean, it's like they changed the dial on a podcast.
maybe I, you know, I changed clothes. I kind of, you know, had a meal in that short break. And
that's right.
Read a book, walked my dog. I'm back.
I read Proust while you were, you know.
I'm tidying up my living room as we speak. And I'm putting this Steinmeier Technique and Understanding book. I've got these magic books, like these thick ones laying around. Just with the idea that if I keep them laying around, I'll read them. But it just never happens. This book is awesome, but I've only looked at the pictures.
Dude,
I should read this.
You know what's just happened to me that's making me like go back and reread things and reevaluate things? One of my kids has really just in the last few days taken a shine to magic.
Really?
And she's made moves here and there over the years, but she's just really, really like walking around with a deck of cards, you know.
How old is she?
10.
Wow, walking around with a deck, dude. Stop her now.
Yeah, hey man.
That's awesome.
You know what the world, you know,
The world needs more female magicians.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You know, she's blonde. She's blue eyed.
She's going to be printing money soon.
Yeah. Well, and my older girl is taking up cold reading.
Uh-huh.
Which,
really?
By the way, dude, here's the advice for all parents out there. Third friggin' teen. Just turned 13.
Did you know teach her this?
No. And I have a reason not to. You don't want a 13-year-old cold reading. You don't. The last thing you need is a teenager with mental powers.
That kind of usurps your parental, your power, is if your child can Jedi mind trick you.
Yeah, which, I mean, luckily, she's getting all this stuff out of my library, so.
Uh-huh. You've already been there. Yeah, done that. But it might prompt you to reread things.
It is, because, like, I don't do card tricks, man.
Mm-hmm.
It just doesn't work for me for a lot of reasons. It hasn't over the year. And now I'm having to go back and being like, I had a double lift at one point in my life. You know, before a lot of our listeners were born. So,
right. What better way to hone your skills? It's like, you know, I'm sure dads get really good at playing catch when their sons are, you know, 12 years old, or they at least finally learn how to play ball. And what a good way for you to, you know, relearn your card slides.
Oh, it is. I knew that because I've taught martial arts, and like that's the best way to kind of keep up your and I've taught magic classes before, but man, like right in the house here, every time I sit down, you know, and try to pop open a beer or whatever. And she's like, hey. And that's the other thing is like every time I sit down, if somebody's in my face going, pick a card. Like,
dude.
Damn it. Did your grandma put you up to this?
It's your best worst nightmare.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. So yeah, you know, that's what you need to do. You need to breed, and you need to get
honestly, that's what I think I might need to do. Cause you know, the intense sleight of hand work, you know, and just good card slides, you know, my double lift, my pass, my top change, all learned in junior high school when, you know, when you're young, you can just absorb that stuff so quick. And, you know, while I'm in class pretending to pay attention, I'm under the desk practicing my moves.
Exactly.
And you just don't really have that kind of, dedication when you're older. I mean, I'm sure you can. I just don't. I just don't have that kind of attention span.
But part of it is, it's not, is it attention span or is it the fact that you're supposed to be like learning whatever,
well, the trigonometry. Fact that now we're adults, like, and we got to deal with all this other stuff. You know, when you're younger, you know, you don't need to make a living. Your meals are provided for you, so you can fill the time with, learning an amazing skill.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you could get like a terrible job where you sat in one place and nobody paid attention to what you were doing, you could probably get some skills there too.
Exactly. That's what's kept me from like trying to learn the guitar at 33 is that I don't know how thrilled I'll be at sucking at something as an adult. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but you know what? Right now you can't play guitar. Sucking is an improvement.
So I definitely, I currently suck at guitar. But I also don't play, so therefore, you know, if a tree falls in a wood in the woods, can you tell I can't play?
No, my point is if you don't play, you don't even suck. You haven't even achieved sucking yet.
Yes, it would be an honor to suck.
And that's something I've always told my kids. It's like sucking is the first step to being awesome.
Right.
You know?
All right.
And you gotta deal with it.
This is like a therapy session for me too. Thank you, Michael.
It's what I'm like the Big Brothers program for magic.
Uh-huh.
All right. Hey, but back to you. Other than me as a mentor.
Yes.
Who has not necessarily been a mentor, but like who has pushed you along over the years, especially career wise? Is there a model? Have you looked at like the guys like Harry Anderson and Penn and Teller and Amazing Jonathan who did the comedy? You know.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you just kind of nailed the big couple there. Like. Harry Anderson, I think like my favorite magic book ever is Harry Anderson's Wise Guy by Mike Caveney, because Night Court was just coincidentally my favorite sitcom as a kid. Loved it. And I loved Night Court before I knew Harry Anderson was originally a magician and comedian. So it was just like such a beautiful revelation that that someone could take that path, you know, start the same way I'm starting and achieve what he achieved, you know, and that also, you know, had Johnny Carson had the same inspirational qualities to me, you know, just that somebody could start by doing exactly what we're doing and it could lead to something like that, you know, so it was just a great, you know, great inspiration. Mack King always followed his career, always loved his career. The fact that he's able to, you know, stay true to the genre of magic that he does so well and the style of comedy and have such a great Vegas career and his own show for so long is a great inspiration. Amazing Jonathan's always been, you know, huge for me because, you know, these days within the past couple of years, I've really been transitioning big into the comedy community. And Amazing Jonathan is just someone who is able to straddle magic and comedy and really be accepted in both. And Penn and Teller for sure, very inspired by their, prolificness and diversification and the fact that they can do so much and do so many things while also maintaining an amazing career with their show is, you know, is awesome. And the fact that you can go see their show once a year, every year and see so many new things is so inspiring. So those are the main guys who really, I think, light me up, and, you know, make me, you know, reassure me that I'm on the right path in those dark days, whenever they happen, you know?
In those dark days.
Those dark days. No, those dark cupcake-filled days.
You're just sitting there, there's icing over your face.
Staring at frosting. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
No, I'm with you on Anderson. I'm a little older than you, so, like, I remember staying up late and sneaking up and seeing him actually on like Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Now I watched all these on Hulu and YouTube and dude, it was just so cool. So cool. The fact that one, this was before he was, you know, a celebrity as an actor, the fact that a comedian magician could host Saturday Night Live, be featured on Saturday Night Live, be given such great airtime to do so much awesome stuff. So exciting, you know, and you don't see that these days. So those early clips were so great and his comedic voice was so unique and the fact that he was able to, you know, Amazing Jonathan, you know, the magic is kind of the punchline. The magic doesn't work and that's the punchline, which is a great thing for him. But with Harry Anderson, the magic works and there's still a punchline. So it's right. Like he gets the best of both worlds. He gets to have his cake and eat it too. He gets to be a magician doing real skilled magic, but also be accepted as a comedian by the people who may roll their eyes at magic. So it's, you know, that's that little pocket that I really want to spend more time in, you know?
Right. And you know, the great things about the early Anderson as well is he's a terrible person. You know,
you mean just his persona?
As
yeah.
A character.
Throwing his wife on the floor.
Yeah.
You know, I love that stuff, but yet you can't help but love the guy.
Exactly. That's amazing to me. I'm a big.
My goal is to be a lovable, terrible person one day. One day.
Without just being old and grandpa and, you know, and the kid and the grandkids are guilted into loving
exactly.
you.
Exactly. The goal is to be young and terrible.
It's good to have goals and affirmations.
Boy can dream.
You wake up every day and say, today I will be a little bit worse than I was the day before.
Let me see how many babies I could. Well, I don't even know. I don't want to see.
Oh, yeah. Don't go there.
I don't want to see. Yeah.
Don't go there. See, now I don't feel quite so bad about the last headline I wrote about you on iTrix.
Oh, exploits kids?
Yeah. Not in a bad way.
Not in a bad way. I know. And you always approach the updates with a nice, healthy dose of snark, you know, and I appreciate that.
Hey, I'm going to dime Justin out. I'm going to tell a true story. Not you, Justin, the other Justin.
Yeah.
I did actually send that by Justin and was like, hey, am I pushing this too far? And he's like, yes. And I'm going to think of something and I'm going to change it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he got busy or whatever, or he couldn't get through to the site on his phone or something like that. And it didn't get changed. And I was like, I'm like, and he's like, well, he's like, he'll probably be all right with it. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to send him an email, see if he'll be on the podcast. That's actually why you're on the podcast now.
Was just to smooth it over, make sure we're cool?
No, just because I figured, what the hell? I'm not apologizing. I'm just going to see if he wants to be on
the
show.
Yeah, no, I dug it. I retweeted it. I was all about it. I was all about it.
Cool, good.
Yeah, come on. I mean, it is what it is. Now, you know, and I know you were, you know, being humorous about it. Obviously, I love with that video, like I like that I was able to do something utilizing kids, have it be pure and innocent, but also like not be a video for kids. You know what I mean? It's like kids would watch a video. They really couldn't care less. They're like, yeah, so that's what we say. That's what I think. I don't care. I don't know. I don't get what's so funny. You have to not be a kid anymore to enjoy that. So I kind of like that I was able to find a little pocket to, well, like we said earlier, get the best of both worlds, you know?
Was that a nightmare to shoot, to work with all those kids?
No, you know, we shot that in about 2 hours. This was a video we shot for my, I do a talk variety comedy sketch magic show here in LA called Sleight of Mouth. I've been doing it at the Nerdist Theater at Meltdown Comics for the past 2 years. So we'll do a couple video drop-ins every month for that. So this was the most recent show that we did, which was kind of an important show because we had a lot of networks coming out to potentially pitch and hopefully buy the show. So that video, honestly, I thought it was a total fail on the shoot day because the kids were just so shy. The cameras made them very, very introverted. You know, the boom mic, the kids kept looking up at this boom mic. They're like, what the heck is that? What's it going to do? You know, I had to really draw it out of them. And my buddy Adam Scott Franklin, who edited it, you know, that's where the real magic happened, that he was able to find these little gems and create a pace with it, because I thought it was a bust.
Nice. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So you're a busy guy. I mean, I think we've established that, if nothing else.
I try to stay busy, yeah.
Yeah. Do you keep up, other than the magic books that you have scattered around your place that you aren't reading? I mean, do you still keep up with the magic world? Do you get your genie and your, you know,
yeah,
your magic?
Yeah, I get my magic. I don't get genie. I don't know why, not for any particular reason. But I stay pretty up to date. I read my eye tricks. You know,
as everyone should.
And I also, you know, I get looped in on all the hot gossip that's going around, you know, and I try to not perpetuate gossip, but it's good to know what people are talking about out there. So I like to think I'm hip to the news, hip to what's up.
Okay. Well, because some guys have that theory that like they want to kind of insulate, you know, they're afraid.
I used to have that theory. Like I lived in LA. Yeah, I moved here in 2002, and I didn't even attempt to join the castle until 2005, because I was just like, yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up in St. Louis in a very intense magic community, to, you know, SAM, IBM, big, you know, active rings. So I was just around magicians all the time, and that was so crucial to my upbringing. But I think I thought, yeah, I don't need to be a member of the castle. I don't need to, like, hang out with magicians all the time. And I couldn't have been more wrong, because once I joined the castle, it was just, you know, you find the right community that you need to be with. You find the right group of friends that, you know, that are honest with you about certain things and supportive. And, you know, there's a lot of clickiness out there. There's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of gossip. And, you know, I'm really fortunate to be able to find, like, the right group of magician friends that keep me just as dialed in as I need to be, but don't kind of perpetuate what I think is destructive to magic and magicians.
Do you have useful non-magician friends in that realm?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of, you know, I went to college with a lot of comedians. And when I first moved out here, you know, they kind of took me into the comedy community, and I would go up and do open mics and do comedy clubs and kind of just hang with comics. So that posse of friends is really crucial to me as well. Obviously, you need someone to keep you grounded outside of magic. You don't want to get too magic-y. You know, you don't want the only people giving you advice to be magicians, because, you know, they take some things that are really important to magicians might not be as important and necessary to put all this weight on, you know, in the bigger picture. And it's, you know, people outside of magic who can, you know, keep you aware of that.
Okay. Now, believe it or not, man. Hey, you don't make fun of me for saying man. You just said posse.
I say man. I say buddy. I say some weird stuff, so I'm not making...
Posse. I thought it was 2002 again for a second.
I'll even say that this interview's been swell. It's been swell, man.
I think it's been swell again, which is both swell and elegant.
It's been neato.
Which was the tag of DC Comics in the 50s.
Swell and elegant?
Swell again. They're swell again.
Nice.
That's how nerdy I am. Thanks, everybody.
Go.
Good night. But seriously, we're about out of time. And
well, it's a pleasure. I mean, we kind of, you know, just tip of the iceberg. I enjoy, you know, chatting. It was lovely chatting with you. And we should do it again. We should do a part two sometime.
Definitely. Definitely.
You know, let me know what the hot magic gossip is. And I'd love to chime in a very ambivalent, politically correct way.
That's right. Because I am in the magic capital of the world, St. Louis, Missouri.
St. Louis, Missouri.
I've declared magic capital of the world. Boom.
It kind of is. Proud to be from it.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. We're homies now.
We're homies, but you but have never met.
But never met.
Yeah.
Never met. And but yeah, until somebody comes and wrestles me for the title, St. Louis, Magic Capital of the World.
I'll take it. And hey, thank you for you know, taking the time to chat with me. I don't know who canceled that freed up a spot for me, but I'm glad they did.
No. Nobody canceled. We went out, we went out of your way after I insulted you on the website. I figured, hey, I'll extend the olive branch.
Well, then to balance it out, you owe me at least one glowing blurb. But you can kind of make it so glowing that we know that you're bullshitting us in the end.
I'll put the asterisk and say
yes.
Our legal department said I have to say that Justin Wilbin.
This new
comedy
project
genius
is delightful. Yeah, boy, he's really hit the nail on the head and is not taking advantage of these children or senior citizens in any way. No. Enjoy the video.
Well, you know, as long as the video clip doesn't start with like News 4 investigates, you're usually okay. Even if I say you're taking advantage of
children.
Don't worry.
You'll be good. I'll have bigger troubles than eye tricks if that's the problem.
But as we draw to a close, how can people follow you? You're all over the web. Give them some places to find you.
Yeah, man. My Twitter, you can find me on Twitter, Justin_Wilbin. I'm working on getting rid of that underscore. I've got to somehow schmooze up this baseball player who shares a name with me. Instagram @JustinWilbin. I just ditched the underscore on Instagram, so congrats to me there. And then you can go to my website, justinwilbin.com, and sign up for the newsletter and say hey. Say hey. Yeah.
There you go. I hope you get 1,000 emails that just say hey.
Hey. All right, bring it on.
Thanks again for talking with us. And everybody out there, thanks for listening. We will be back next week with another Magic Week in Review. Until then, to keep current with everything in the world of magic, itricks.com.